You're listening to the Flasco Oncopod, brought to you by the Florida Society of Clinical Oncology, the voice of oncology in Florida.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to this Flasco podcast. Today, we're going to be talking about a very important topic in GI medical oncology, which is young onset colorectal cancer. So the title for our episode today is Younger, Later, Sicker, and Changing Faces of Colorectal Cancer. I'm Tiago Biacchi. I'm a medical oncologist focused on GI cancers here at Moffitt Cancer Center. And today with me, I have Dr. Raji Shamim. Raji, you want to introduce yourself?
Yeah, happy to be here. Thanks for having me. My name is Raji. I'm a medical oncologist at Orlando Health Cancer Institute. I have interest in GI oncology. I treat all types of GI cancers, but that includes colorectal cancer.
Thanks for joining, Raji. So the idea today actually is to cover this topic, and just to put in the context, actually Flasco ran a survey recently with all Flasco members, and it got a lot of things actually caught our attention, and then we're gonna be discussing this today. But I think we can go ahead and get started with the first topic, which was this alarming rising incidence of young patients with colorectal cancer. It's definitely something I'm seeing in my practice. I would say probably about 20% of my patients now are younger than 50. We know that this is a population with special needs. We know that depending on tumor location, mainly for rectal cancers, the treatment can be really toxic for those patients, including some long-term toxicities, sexual dysfunction, colostomies, etc. So I guess my I think this is not only here in Florida, so but in at least in academic centers we're seeing this clear trend. Dr. Shamim, is it something that you're seeing in your practice too?
Yeah, I would say in the community. So like before working in Orlando Health, I worked in private practice. Even at that time, it's shocking. In Florida, we typically say all our patients are elderly. But, there is definitely a rising incidence in young, early onset GI cancers, including colorectal cancer. I consider less than 50. I think that's my age for early onset colorectal cancer. And I think it's interesting that overall, all colorectal cancer is reduced incidence, but there's a contrast for the young patients, right? And as you mentioned, it's rising. And you look at the curves, it's like it's striking how these patients with no comorbidities, negative genetic testing, but they're diagnosed with usually advanced cancer at the time of diagnosis, stage 4. So I totally agree. It's also very challenging for that patient population.
I think you mentioned two very important points here. First is the absence of genetic predisposition. So because usually when we're talking about young patients with cancer, this is the first thing that comes to mind. So they probably have some genetic alteration, etc. But this is, I mean, in the minority, right? So less than 10 to 15% of those patients will have, Lynch syndrome, polyposis, et cetera. So most cases, even in this population of, young onset or younger than 50, most cases actually are sporadic. And I have this kind of a conversation with my patients because sometimes, if we make a parallel with other tumors like melanoma, you don't develop a melanoma this year because of sunburn that you had last year, right? And we know that for colorectal cancer, it takes time. This process, like the process between a polyp to a cancer, takes 10 years. So we're not talking about, our habits now or, what you're eating now. So we might be talking about, what we were doing like when we were 15 or 12, what kind of a diet you had at that time, or obesity during life, and all this thing. So yeah, this is, it's very, very, very challenging because, sometimes we'll have patients like with, now at least without any, risk factor, but it's really hard to control, behavior, during, all, the life and, childhood, et cetera.
One thing I wanted to ask you is like, we all do the genetic testing and it comes out negative, as you mentioned, sporadic. I've noticed there are a lot of patients who maybe have like a first degree relative with colorectal cancer, but again, negative genetic testing. I wonder, these patients, they're young, they might see their primary care once a year. Do the PCPs really acknowledge that importance of a family history of colorectal cancer? And would that prompt earlier evaluation or like a higher suspicion for something going
Yeah, and I remember that at that time that, when we're talking about, Lynch syndrome and Amsterdam criteria, and we were discussing, well, we're going to do a germline testing only, if you have like X, family members with cancer and,
on?
till like one or two generations, et cetera. And now, actually, we're moving towards like testing everybody for sure, everybody with, younger than 50. And I guess we might be, being even, more proactive, because we have a lot of, patients, older than 50 that probably they're going to have like germline alterations. So definitely. And then the other point that you mentioned that I want to, discuss is this like more advanced, staging, which is very unfortunate for those patients. But I think, and I want to hear your thoughts about this, but I feel like sometimes for, PCPs, mainly, I think there's a lack of education about the definition of screening because we changed recently, right? So we're starting now at 45, and I'm seeing like quite often patients coming like in the 30s or in the early 40s with many months of rectal bleeding and changing bowel movements, etc. And when I asked like, wow, okay, but you had those symptoms, so why the PCP did not order a colonoscopy before? And then they said, well, because they told me that I was supposed to start screening at 45. So I think this is a message, that we have to, spread a word about this screening if it's something for asymptomatic patients, right? So if you're 45 and you're feeling great, you go and you get screened. But if you have symptoms, I don't care about your age, right? So if you have rectal bleeding, change of bowel movements, or persistent pain, or unexplained weight loss, it doesn't matter if you're 30s and the 40s, right? So you need a colonoscopy.
I think that is you hit it. That's the most important point I would say from this discussion is most early onset colorectal cancer patients, they have symptoms, but they're deemed not eligible for screening modalities. As you mentioned, I think we're doing a better job. Patients are getting their colonoscopies at age 45. We're missing those young patients, right? And a lot of them might have abdominal pain, weight loss, and they're young, and a lot of the providers attribute to something else because you don't think of metastatic colorectal cancer. So I agree. If someone's symptomatic, that should prompt evaluation. Just not.
Have you seen, issues with the insurance covering this?
Yeah, I've heard maybe my colleagues, it's really, I feel that, if someone has the symptoms and the weight loss, I think we're doing a good job is if we document why we're doing it. And I haven't had issues, to be honest with you. If I feel that I would need to do imaging or something, or just have a gastroenterologist to do a colonoscopy, I think we can get it done. But we just have to put that referral in and talk to our colleagues. Just acknowledge, recognize that this patient might be at risk for something serious.
Yeah, documenting is, it's key, and we all know, sometimes, insurance can be a little bit tricky, and this kind of, this insurance and I would say financial, toxicity with this kind of, disease and this kind of a treatment is critical, for this population too. So quite often, actually, the patient is responsible, for his family or for her family. And and sometimes I've heard this a couple of times that people say, well, I never had time to get a colonoscopy because I had to stay out of my work life for 2 days, for the prep, et cetera. So it's so unfortunate that people cannot stay out of work like for 2 days or 1 day to get a colonoscopy, which is something, if it's clear, you're going to repeat this in 10 years, right? So it's not a huge deal. I'm glad that we have like non-invasive, procedures. We just
Yeah.
got another one approved. Have you seen patients like with the blood-based, screen method recently approved?
I haven't seen it as more frequently, but people are asking about it. How about that? I think there's a better recognition of it. I guess
Yeah.
I'm more old school for colonoscopy. I think that's the way, right? But always, another scenario, iron deficiency anemia, right? If you have a young male, why are they iron deficient, right? And these patients can be anemic for a long time, right? So I would say a colonoscopy could also rule out alternative causes of bleeding as well. So I feel I.
Exactly. Exactly. I think you're totally right. And I mean, I think this kind of non-invasive tests, not only the blood-based, but even the fecal-based, they help mainly for that patient that would not get any screening, right? So if you screen more people, of course, you're gonna find one case here and there. But keep in mind that if it's positive, this has to trigger something. This is at one point. Right, so it doesn't matter if you have like a fecal, and I've seen this a couple of times too. So patients with like a fecal bathe, test like positive for 2 years, and then coming without a colonoscopy first. So it has to trigger something, but also if it's positive, you need a colonoscopy anyway, right? So and sometimes the accuracy for at least for the blood base is not great for less invasive lesions, etc. If you have like of course a non-malignant lesion. And again, keep in mind that we're talking about a test every 10 years, if it's clear every 10 years. So this is not supposed to be a big problem, right?
You know, one thing that you also mentioned is how difficult these patients can be with all their other issues, financial toxicity, psychosocial impact, right? You know, at Moffitt, do you feel it easy to get someone for fertility evaluation, getting a social worker? Because I find that challenging sometimes in the community. These patients are overwhelmed. They have to go somewhere else to get evaluated for this. So it could be a lot of burden on the patient.
Yeah, I'm gonna mention this. Actually, right now we are launching our Yogi, which is the young onset GI cancer group, and we're gonna start focusing on on colorectal cancer because the epidemiology and the idea to create this kind of a group is basically because this I would say sexual infertility was since the beginning were like our main concern with this population, and mainly fertility, I would say, for patients that we have to rush sometimes with treatment, etc., because we know that these referrals to outside providers they are not easy, etc. We don't have, for example, I mean, we have a group focused on this at Moffitt, but we don't have like a mechanism to do the fertility preservation here at Moffitt. But I would say having this kind of a structure, help us to have, this outside provider will take care of all patients, with rectal cancer before the radiation, etc. So this patient will not get lost, looking for someone, and while, he's struggling with, cancer symptoms and is struggling with the insurance getting approved, his chemotherapy and with the, all concerns regarding the cancer and the chemotherapy, etc. So this is something that we're trying to mitigate at least this component, which is very, very stressful for for our patients. Colostomy is another thing for rectal cancer. I think the idea with this kind of a group is putting together patients with kind of the same experience and say, hey, there's a life after colostomy. That's okay. So you're gonna see a lot of patients out there with a colostomy. Sometimes this is temporary. Sometimes this is something that has to be permanent, but there's a lot of things that you can do to improve your quality of life with a colostomy, and of course research, right? The idea with this kind of a group is having a database, and we can follow those patients prospectively, and the idea is even to collect biomarkers and see what's going on. For example, we have the opportunity at Moffitt to treat patients coming from different counties, for example. So and just to give an example, microplastic, for example. Microplastic is it's everywhere. They found like microplastic like in patients with brain cancers, etc. So one of those ideas as well, maybe we can test for this like in the stools in patients coming from different communities, etc., and see what's really is driving this increasing incidence of colorectal cancer in our patients.
One thing I wanted to ask you, what are your thoughts about prognosis? I think like we majority of patients, young, early onset, they're diagnosed with metastatic disease, maybe late evaluation, that's why they have metastatic disease. But you know, like if we look for those rare mutations, biomarker abnormalities, like MSI high, you know, immunotherapy, that's great. But majority of my patients rely on conventional therapy, like chemotherapy, right? And I
They all come, asking for immunotherapy.
Yes, that's the thing. But and I wish we could offer it, but yeah, right. So microsatellite is stable, and I feel that they have more aggressive tumor biology. I think they tend to blow through the conventional therapies that our elderly patients can actually get a lot of mileage on, right? So I feel just it's a totally different tumor biology.
And this might be kind of a multi-factorial too. I think the diagnosis is usually later in these patients. Biology is probably worse. And wow, that's maybe why this patient developed this cancer at this age.
True.
But also even tolerance. Sometimes we have this idea that young patients can tolerate much better, etc. But I think their tolerance to toxicities like neuropathy, for example, it's tough, right? And if you keep in mind that we're talking about, usually all our toxicities, they go away when we stop the chemotherapy. And I usually I say, well, neuropathy is the only one that can persist. So, and we're gonna keep tracking this, very close. And sometimes, the tolerance to neuropathy is lower in these patients, and rash. It's a huge deal, for these patients, and here in Florida, of course, everybody's outdoor, so it's really hard to treat, sometimes with anti-EGFR, etc. So I think there are a lot of different components, but the late diagnosis, it's really impressive. And yeah, you're right. Unfortunately, MSI high is very, very rare, like 2-3% of patients. I mean, they kind of forgot to mention that, when everything started, and they published for the first time in New York Times, they kind of forgot to mention that this works like for a very rare population. So everybody comes, asking for neuropathy and
Yeah.
for immunotherapy, and it works, of course. It's a great option for those. It's not 100%. I do have one patient that failed. It's not 100%, but it works, great for patients with rectal and, a localized disease. But unfortunately, still, like for only minority patients, that we still is struggling to make this tumor like hotter, for the immune system.
Yeah, no, I think it's evolving. Hopefully more patients can benefit, but I think that
Absolutely. Well, for metastatic disease, actually, there are some combinations coming, with immunotherapy, mainly for patients without, liver mets. But this is the topic of for our next episode, right? So I just want to thank you so much, Raji. I really appreciate your time to be here, with me today, and I'm looking forward, to the next discussion.
Thank you for having me.